Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
Tenemos el gusto de recibir por primera vez en México a Rav Yosef Mizrahi. Ha dado algunas conferencias esta semana y la verdad es que tiene discos muy interesantes que también van a encontrar aquí a la salida. Los dejo aquí en la voz de él. Bienvenido, papá.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Emilio. Baruch Hashem, I'm concluding three beautiful days here in Mexico. And in less than 2 hours, I should be already back in the airport to New York, Bezrat Hashem. So we'll make a short lecture now. And we can get something out of this hour for the rest of our life, then it was worth it. When you ask a person today, who is a smart person? Who is a smart human being? Most of the people in the world will answer you, someone who went to university and got degrees. The more education he has, the smarter he is. When we open the Torah never spoke about university or high school or anything like that. What did the Torah say? The Torah, it's the book of Hashem, and Hashem defined what it means a wise guy. Who is a wise person? What does the Torah say? Reshit Chokhma Irat Hashem. When you want to start speaking about wisdom, the first sign that a person should have to show that he's wise is that he has, believe it or not, fear from God. Then you know this person is a smart person. If he doesn't have it, but he has 10 different degrees from the best universities in the world, according to God, not only is not wise, is basically no wisdom at all. The question is, how can it be? A person went, he's a doctor, he can be a lawyer, he can even be a judge in a court. He's definitely not a stupid person. How does the Torah doesn't give credit to someone like this? Is it possible, such thing? The Gemara says, Chokhmah bagoyim ta'amin. If you see non-Jews that are very smart, don't be surprised. It's very possible. They are goyim, they know math, computer, science, medicine, many things. It's no problem. But we are not talking about this kind of chokhmah. We are talking about chokhmah that the Torah call it da'at. Today I spoke in a school today, and I explained in a school to the high school kids, I explained to them that there are three words in Judaism, in the ancient Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh, that if you ask in Israel the people on the street that they speak modern Hebrew, they won't know to tell you the answer. If you ask them, can you tell me the difference between Chokhmah, Bina, Vada'at, what are the differences between those three words? Almost all of them would answer you, it's Mila Nirdefet. It's similar words. Sometimes the language is rich. There are similar words. But I explain that it's not similar at all. Why? Every word in Judaism has something unique about it. There's no two words that are equal. Even if in a mother language people sometimes use this word, but sometimes they use this word, it doesn't mean that they are the same. This is the ignorance of the people. When we learn Torah, we know that every word has something unique about it. Unique. And what's special about those three words? Chokhmah means intelligence. Someone tell you a story, you understand the details. Bina means the ability to understand one thing from another. Someone told you something, and from that story, you learn about other things we did not speak about. For instance, 2 times x equal 8. Nobody told you that x is 4. But how do you know? You knew that 2 times x is 4, it's 8. That means x has to be 4. There are many examples in life that sometimes a person say one word and the rabbi will already understand his entire life story. It happens to me all the time. People come to me, I see how they look, I see how they move, and as soon as they open their mouth 2-3 words, I already know the story. Why? That's experience of 20 years. I wasn't born like that. When you do something for 20 years every night, and you meet so many thousands of people, you see that you can categorize the people to about 8 to 10 departments. They're all the same. You just have to know how they behave. As soon as they behave in a certain way, you already know to what group this person belongs. Or another example, wisdom can be so good that a speaker that has experience with audience, when someone moves in a chair, he already knows what he thinks. Based on when exactly he moved, what word, and how he moved, or if he moved his hand because he wanted to ask a question, he already knows the question. Why? Because it already happened 30, 40 times exactly like that in different places, because the mind of the people sometimes thinking the same. That's called Bina. The ability to understand one thing from another. And comes the third thing, which is the most important thing. It's called Da'at. The Torah says something shocking, really shocking. What does it say? Chachamim, Chazal. Chazal say, Da'at kanita, ma chasarta. Da'at chasarta, ma kanita. If you have Da'at, you have everything in life. You don't have Da'at, you have nothing. Right away, the person says, excuse me, maybe I don't have a Da'at, but I own 10 buildings here. So what do you mean I don't have everything? I'm the richest guy in town. Open the Torah. What does Hashem say about you? You have nothing. Then you say, okay, let me try something else. I have wife and children, family. Hashem say, you have nothing. Say, well, I'm a doctor, I'm a big professor in university, I have thousands of followers. Hashem say, gurnish, nothing. Say, okay, I have Da'at. Hashem say, you have everything, you're perfect. So now, it's very interesting. It's possible that we're going to have a 16 years old boy, the beginning of his life, goes to yeshiva, likes to learn, and he got the point, what's the purpose of life. And then next to him, his grandfather, that is 7 years old, multi-billionaire, and according to the opinion of God, the multi-billionaire successful grandfather is zero, complete zero, not even one. And this boy is 195%. Sounds very strange, but it's 100% true. Why? Because it all goes according to the purpose of life. The purpose of life is not to be famous. The purpose of life is not to be a billionaire. The purpose of life is not to be healthy. The purpose of life is not to be good looking. The purpose of life is not to have degrees. The purpose of life is not to drive a nice car and make a show off. None of these things counts as the purpose of life. That's why whatever you have, it's nothing. You're not touching the point. You go around. You have and you have and you have. It's really nothing in the eyes of Hashem. Hashem doesn't care how many doctorates you're going to have. He's not going to promote you in Olam Haba with all this education that you have. He will not. This boy that may not have any university education is already living according to the purpose every day of his life. That's why he has fear from Hashem. So now you're going to say, you're probably thinking, wait a minute. The purpose of life is to have fear. That's what Hashem wanted us, that we're all going to sit and we'll shake from his punishments or from what he's thinking about us. This is the purpose of life. So why he even created us? Maybe better not to be created. The answer, the Gemara asks your question. The Gemara say there were 2 big yeshivot about 2100 years ago. Yeshiva of Bet Hillel, Hillel HaZaken, and Yeshiva of Bet Shammai, the 2 biggest yeshivot in the world. And they have philosophical arguments about life. And their philosophical arguments are all brought in a Talmud. 2.5 years, they had a big argument. Hundreds of big Talmidei Chachamim, that each one of them is greater than all the rabbis in the world combined. Just for you to understand. It's not an exaggeration. You take all the rabbis in the world combined, can they take a person from the grave and bring him back to life? They can't do it. But the Chachamim, everyone whose name is mentioned in the Talmud, was able lechayot et amet. That's how much Kabbalah and secrets they know. It's not a secret, it's not a joke here. Each Chacham that is mentioned in the Talmud, that means he was a perfect Chacham. If he was 98%, they would not write his name. He was a perfect human being that from the day he was born until the day he finished his life, he did not waste a second. Like Rabbi Yochanan, he was 120 years old. Moments before he died, he was crying in his bed. All his Talmidim, all his students standing around him, say, Rabbi, what are you afraid of? We wish to be 1% from your wisdom and Yirat Shamayim. Why are you so worried? So he told them, if I would go in front of a judge in court here in this world, I would still be very nervous. Now when I go in front of a judge that you cannot bribe him and he knows everything, how can I not be nervous? So the student told him, but Rabbi, no one is in your level. If you're afraid, what are we going to say? No one is in your level in the whole world. So give us a bracha, give us a blessing before you leave this world, because we will never have an opportunity to stand next to someone like you. So he told them, Yehi ratzon sheyem mora shamayim alechem kemora bnei adam. I'm blessing you that you will fear God just as much as you fear people. Same way you're afraid of the policeman, the same way you're afraid of the FBI, the same way you're afraid of your wife, the same way you're afraid of your mother-in-law. Whatever the case is, I hope that you will fear God just as much. So the students, they say, what is he blessing us? Or he's making fun at us? What kind of a blessing? He couldn't give us a better blessing? But the answer is, if you really check your life, and count all the sins that you made from the day you became religious until today, such as violate Shabbat by mistake, or spoke Lashon Hara about somebody important in a time of anger, or ate something that you found out is very not kosher, or the laws of Nida, you know, you didn't pass the test, things that are very serious. So did you ever feel the heart going 200 per minute, just like when the policemen pull you over and put handcuffs on you, or that they just told you that the FBI wants to investigate you, or that they just told you that they want to break your shidduch? Do you know what happened when something like this happened, how the heart goes and you feel that you're going on fire? Did you ever feel once in your life like this when you made a sin? If yes, that's what Rabbi Yochanan meant. If you feel like this when you make a sin, then you reach the level of you have that. It's not so simple to get that. People think, I'm religious. Yes, you're religious, but you don't have that. You're a robot. You know, I heard today a good joke. Someone say, Gvirotai verobotai. Usually it's Gvirotai verabotai. There's one rabbi, he came one time and he saw that everyone is busy like a robot with their tefillin, with the talit, everyone, you know, with the phones. So he started his lecture, Gvirotai, ladies, instead of say Rabotai, which means gentlemen, he say Robotai, which means robot. So that's what woke them up. We really behave like robots sometimes. Shlomo HaMelech, the smartest person ever lived, that was in the highest level in wisdom. What did he write? Ashrei Adam mefached tamid. A person that always have the fear from the sin, not from the punishment. Fear from the punishment is not a high level. Usually, when you speak to children, you educate them about fear from the punishment because they are not capable of understanding higher levels yet. In few years, they will. But right now, they only understand allowed, not allowed. You get a candy or you get a smack on your hand. or you're going to go to your room. That's what they understand when they're 5, 10, see, whatever the age is. But maybe one day they'll be 17, 18, they begin to understand what life is all about. But Shlomo HaMelech speaking about different kind of fear. It's called, there are two kinds of fear in Judaism. Yirat ha'onesh, fear from the punishment, which the Rambam says it's very low level. And Yirat ha'romemut, fear from knowing who you're dealing with. Let me explain what I mean. There used to be a rabbi, his name was Rav Saadia Gaon. He lived about 1,000 years ago. One day he was on a road, and he came, there was a heavy snowstorm, and he went inside the motel to find a room for the night. It was heavy snow, he cannot ride the horse outside. So they say to him, we sold out, we don't have a place. So he said to them, what do you expect me to sleep in the snow? Find me any place. So they said, where can I find you? Only in the hallway. You want to sleep in the hallway? Now they don't know who he is, because in the old days there was no Google or YouTube that you want to see who the rabbi is. You type his name and then everyone knows about him. In the old days, the Rambam can stand next to you in the shul and you don't know it's Rambam. It can be the Ari HaKadosh, you don't know it's the Ari HaKadosh. And who told you? Accidentally, you came to the same shul on the way, some way. You don't know. Everyone used to dress like this. Today, for instance, I speak on the radio in New York. So I walk on the street in certain areas, I cannot walk one block on the street. How they know me? In the radio, you don't see the face. They hear the name, they come to Google to see who the person is, as soon as they put rabbi. Why? All my pictures come out. So it's very easy today. But in the old days, it wasn't like this. Sometimes people pretended to be rabbis. They came, and said, what's your name? He said, my name is the Magid Midovna. Yeah. In the end, he's not just another person, but nobody knows. So they treat him, he wants respect. So he lied, and there was no ID. Can you show us your passport? Can you show us your driver's license? If people knew you, they know who you are. If not, you can say whatever you want. So they say to Rav Saadia Gaon, okay, you know what? We'll put you on some mattress on the floor on the hallway of the motel. So, okay, thank you very much. Muchas gracias. No, very good. Okay. In the morning, when everyone was waking up, one person walked next to the rabbi. You see him sitting on the floor like this on a mattress. And one person recognized him. As soon as he saw the biggest chacham in the world slept on the floor like a dog, chas v'shalom, he started to scream in a hotel, how something like this happened, the honor of the Torah. So right away everyone came. What happened? Who did such a crime, making such a big rabbi sleeping like this on the floor? So the owner of the motel came. What happened? He said, do you know the Sefer Torah is on the floor like this? And everyone sleeping in their rooms? Wow, excuse us, we didn't know who you are, Mechila, forgive us. So the owner of the hotel started to cry that something like this happened in his hotel. So Rav Saadia Gaon told him, don't worry, I forgive you 100%. It's not your fault, you did me a favor. You gave me a place to sleep, I would freeze outside. But you just taught me a big lesson for life. When nobody knew who I am, nobody cared what I do, where I am, I'm on the floor, I'm not on the floor. Nobody, it didn't bother anyone. But as soon as you found out who I am, what kind of fear you got? I learned a lesson for my whole life. When I deal with Hashem every day, on a daily basis, every day, every minute, every hour, I got used to him. Sometimes I feel, my buddy, my friend, my father, it's all in the family. We'll take care of business, don't worry. Now I realize what does it mean to fear Yirat HaRomemut. When you know who you're dealing with, you faint right away. One generation ago in Israel, when the Gabbai came to the shul in Rosh Chodesh Elul, 1 month before Rosh Hashanah, 40 days before Yom Kippur, the Gabbai, all over Israel, they used to go like this, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Rabotai, Elul, the month of Elul started. Right away, half of the people in the shul would fall and faint. One generation ago. Today when they say Rabotai, Elul. Nobody even listen. Nobody cares. Except the baby that started to cry, heard Elul. Nobody cared about Elul. But in the old days, Elul is not over yet. Anyway, so what happened? Rabotai Elul, half of the people would faint. The Torah says like this: En bur yerechet ve'en amaretz chasid. What does it mean, bur? What does it mean, amaretz? The Rambam categorized people in five different categories, based on the words of Chazal, of course. Category one is Am Haaretz. No, Bur. Category one, Bur. Category two, soon I want to explain what it means. Category two, Am Haaretz. Category three, Golem. Category four, Tzadik. Category five, Chassid. What does it mean, Bur? What does it mean, Am Haaretz? What does it mean, Golem? What does it mean, Tzadik? What does it mean, Chassid? The answer is, Bur means a person that doesn't have no Torah knowledge and no good personality, no good midot. Bad midot, zero knowledge in Torah, nothing. Doesn't know halakha, doesn't know what to do, nothing. That's called Bur. What does it mean, Am Haaretz? Am Haaretz means someone that has good midot, manners, polite, respect people. You know, people come to his home, he put good food. But he doesn't know any Torah. He doesn't learn Torah. Golem, in Israel, if you say to an Israeli person, you're such a golem, he'll hate you for the rest of his life. But he didn't know it's the nicest blessing someone ever blessed him in his whole life. Why? Because in modern Hebrew, some of the words is the opposite of the words of the Torah. When you say golem, means someone dumb, that his head is blacked. That's what the modern Hebrew understand. But really what golem means, someone that is almost perfect in midot, in his personality, and someone that is almost perfect in his Torah level, but both of them needs improvement. He needs to make his midot a little bit more perfect, to become perfect, and a little bit more in his Torah, and he will reach the ultimate level. That's called golem. What does it mean, tzaddik? Tzaddik means that he has Torah, and he has good midot. The Torah is very good with, but the midot needs a little bit improvement. It's not 100% perfect. And what does it mean, chassid? Someone that is completely, completely perfect. His Torah is perfect. His behaving is perfect. You will never catch him do something wrong, ever. Today, when you say the word chassid, everyone imagines someone with fair hat, white socks, you know, big long coat, and long peot, and long beard, and most of the time big glasses, and that's how people imagine chassid, and they eat chulen, and gefilte fish. That's what they understand, chassid. Chassidim, chassidim, that's what people imagine, right? When I say the word chassid, what's the first thing come to your mind? Some chassid from Williamsburg, from Borough Park, from Yerushalayim, that's what people think. Some of these chassidim, really chassidim according to the Torah. They learn Torah all their life and they reach very high level and they are very good in their midot, perfect. So they really reach midat chassidut, like the Ramchal explained in his book, Mesilat Yesharim, Perek, that explained in a chapter what does a chassid mean. Unfortunately, there are also many that dress the same and look the same, and they are far, 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 far away from being chassid, like from the side, one side of the universe to the other side of the universe. Why? Do not learn Torah even a minute a day. Standing, praying Shachrit 11 o'clock, then standing by the coffee machine until 3, talking Lashon Hara with his friends, and then Mincha 2 minutes, Arvit, sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. No personality, no behaving, no chesed, no nothing. So what exactly is chassid about that person? Nothing. Just because the world called it chassid doesn't mean it's chassid in the eyes of Hashem. Chassid means doesn't matter necessarily how your dress is. If it's all white, or if it's all black and white, or if it's blue, that's not what makes you a tzaddik or a chassid. What really makes a person is that when they check the ego, they don't have ego. They check if they're proud, they don't have pride. They down to earth. They never run to get credit. When someone is in problem, they don't expect them to ask for help. They run to help. They're very modest. They watch their eyes. They give their life for the Torah learning. Nothing in the world interests them besides Torah. Nothing. They only care about Hashem and Torah. Not weddings, not vacation, not boat, not jet ski, not a car, not where he lives, nothing whatsoever. He understands, and this world is a blink of the eye. It starts and it will finish before you realize. So he put his entire life to prepare his Olam Haba, which means life of eternity. Somebody like this, that's a big chassid. But how many like this you have in the world? How many? 100? 300? Who knows? Hashem knows. Most of us are very far away from this. So what does the Torah say? En bur yerechet ve'en am haaretz chassid. Someone that is bur, which means he has no Torah and no derech eretz, for sure can never be tzaddik. Can never be. Why? If a person is not educated in Torah, is ignorant, bur, he doesn't know what to do, how he can be tzaddik. Every minute of his life, he makes mistakes. Because he doesn't know what to do. He never learned Torah. How is he going to know? He doesn't know. Ve'am haaretz, I said, he has good manners, but still he doesn't know Torah. So even though he behaves very nice, he doesn't know what to do in Pesach, so he eats chametz by mistake. He makes himself salad, he eats 500 worms, each worm is more than 5 sins from the Torah. Multiply by 500, 3,000 sins, like 3,000 steaks of chazir in one salad. What caused it? If you told him, we're going to serve you now for the next year, 3,000 steaks of pork. You interested? He will begin to cry. So what, this is what you think about me? That I'm going to eat 3,000 steaks of chazir? Shame on you. I don't want anything to do with you. So you tell them, hey, don't be a hypocrite. Just 5 minutes ago, you made yourself a Caesar salad. You don't know how to check the lettuce. You don't know how many bugs and flies are in and how many worms, if you look at them at the sun, you would see how the green small worms are moving. You just see how many sins from the Torah you made, but you never learn. How are you going to know? He comes to the store, he buys matzot. He doesn't check what matzot. Nobody ever told him what matzah is. So you see, 5 kilo matzot, $3. You know those big things? Then next to it, you see, little box, 6 matzot, round one, $25. 6 matzot, $25. 200 matzot, $3. He doesn't even stop to think what's going on here. 6 matzot, $25. 200 matzot, $3. He doesn't stop to think. Right away, Baruch Hashem, it's on sale today. He doesn't know the matzot chametz. It's matzot that is made by machine all year round in a place that the people eat bread and crumbs of the bread fall into the dough. It's matzot, they sell it like crackers. The Ashkenazim eat it in Seuda Shlishit in New York, almost in all the shuls, as bread. They eat it as bread. They put it together with bread. But he doesn't know. So this is just an example how a person can be ignorant and never learns Torah, how many stupid mistakes he can do in his life. I'll give you another example. One time a person came to me. one day before Pesach. One day before. So he said to me, Rabbi, I think I made a big mistake. So I said to him, what? He said, I did not leave any chametz in my house that I will have what to sell to the goy. So believe me, that was a very big test for me because I was about to explode in such a laugh. But then I stopped myself. I said, it's not derech eretz to laugh in someone's face. But he thought there's mitzvah to keep chametz in a house, that the day before Pesach, you go to amigo, come here, Tony, come here. I have something to say to you. What? Here, take a few pieces of bread. This is a part of the mitzvah of Pesach. He doesn't know it's a trick that the Chachamim made for someone who got stuck with expensive chametz, that he doesn't have to throw it to the garbage. So they made him a trick that he can go and sell it to the goy. He think, oh, I did not leave chametz, so what am I going to sell to the goy? He doesn't understand that it's better not to keep chametz. I never sell chametz to the goy. I, 1 month before Pesach, take all the chametz out of the closet and we begin to fress it. We eat it. And then we finish everything. And I don't store expensive bottle of whiskey because I know it's going to be big yetzer hara to throw them to the garbage. So maximum we have a little bit left. We drink it in a week before and finished. We don't have any chametz left in the house. Why? To count on the trick, to sell to the goy. It's just example how a person thing is giving his life for the mitzvot and he doesn't know what to do. Why? En bur yerechet ve'en am ha'aretz chasid. We'll move on. Hashem said to the Jews, Mi iten ve'aya ze levavam le'ira oti kol hayamim. I'll explain to you what it means. Imagine a father has a son, and the son is not such a good kid. He makes a lot of problems to his parents. He's already now 18 years old. And the last 6-7 years, only problems. Doesn't listen, he goes out, he goes with bad friends, he's not religious, he's breaking the hearts of his parents. So one time, he comes home late at night, and here outside in the terrace, his father with his best friends stand sitting outside and talking. So he hears his father crying. So he hears his father say to his friend, I wish my son will give me a little respect and listen to me, that I can give him the whole world and everything that I have. And he listens to it. What do you think would happen to that boy if he surprised his father like this? And he heard that his father, mamash, begging, he said to the friend, I wish he would only listen to me, that I can give him everything, the whole world, whatever I have. What would happen to the heart of this boy? Huh? What do you think? Anyone has an answer? Do you think it would do something to his heart? It will make him feel bad? It would make him shy? It will make him embarrassed? What do you think? Of course. Unless if he has a heart of a stone, he would do something. Maybe tomorrow we'll go back to his yetzer hara, yeah. But right now, he may even cry. That he heard his father begging that he would listen to him a little bit, that he can give him everything. So he would think, what a great father I have after all. What does he really want? He wants what I'm supposed to do, and he wants to give me. So I just read to you exactly what our father is saying. Begging, Hashem is begging us. Can you believe such an embarrassment? The creator of the world, the creator of the universe, the one who gives us oxygen and water and food and houses and cars and money and children and what else? The list is all the way from now until next year. He comes to us in the Torah and says, I'm begging you, my children, fear me a little bit and listen to me. That, it's no big deal. Lo bashamayimi. It's not in heaven. It's not across the ocean. It's right here. It's a piece of cake. It's very easy. Do what I told you, that I will be able to give you what I promised you in the Torah. It's very sad that Hashem has to beg us to listen to Him. Let me give you an example. What does it mean to love Hashem? Let me give you, prepare your handkerchief because you're going to cry now. There was a Yemenite woman, Temanit, Margalit, Margalit Ben Gamliel, that's her name. Margalit, this Margalit, Margalit Bat Avraham Gamliel, that's her correct name. One day, the Yemenite Jews came from Yemen to Israel. It's called Marvad Aksamim. Marvad, that was the name of the operation that they brought the Yemenite. They brought the Ethiopian, they brought the Russian, but before everyone, they brought the Yemenites. So when the Yemenites came, they were very good, naive people. They came from a very primitive country. Almost no one had electric, no television, no radio. There was very, very primitive days. They came to Israel, even though Israel was in a horrible condition, but it was still better than Yemen. So they came to Israel, and some of them had a disease in their skin, like leprosy. We know Parashat Metzora, same thing. They had a leprosy, that it's contagious. The leprosy can make a person catch it, and then you have to lock him in isolation, like jail. The poor Margalit, she had a rash on her skin, not leprosy. She had a rash. The Zionist activist of the Israeli government, they told her, Margalit, we have to put you for a few days in isolation. After we check you, we'll decide what to do with you. But right now you have a disease. We cannot let you go like the rest of the Yemenites. So you have to be calm. There's a hospital. It's all covered with glasses. We have to put you over there. And she came with a Sefer Torah. She brought from Yemen an old Sefer Torah, very expensive old Sefer Torah that probably a big tzaddik wrote. So she said, what am I going to do with my Sefer Torah and all my things? So they told her, oh, don't worry. We open your file, all your belongings that you don't want to bring inside, because then you cannot take it out. Because whatever is there, it's contagious. It doesn't come out. So valuable things, you give it to us, and we'll store it for you. And when you come out, we'll give it back to you. What did she know from her life? So she gave them the Sefer Torah. They put her inside that isolation. She was completely healthy. She didn't have anything. And then over there, she got it from somebody who really had that disease. Now when she got it, it's like a death sentence. She can never come out of this place. So they told her, we're very sorry. You have to stay here for the rest of your life. Which means she will never get married. She will never have children. She will not have anything. She is locked there over there with cruel nurses, because the nurses there, they already for a long, long time, they don't have patience anymore for these people, especially when they don't speak the language. So that's like a death sentence. In Yemen, she had freedom. She had a remori. She had a shul. She had some friends. She had a life. Now they put her in a place, death sentence. So now, the government was giving to the immigrants monthly money, a little bit money. So she decided, since then she doesn't know where her Sefer Torah is gone, she decided to start taking this money and make a Sefer Torah and ask the rabbi to put it inside the shul, that the Sefer Torah will be named after her. So she started to send to a Yemenite sofer in Bnei Brak all the money that the government was giving her. She was sending him every month. She saved a lot of money. She gave him a down payment. And then he collected the money from the government and she made a Sefer Torah. They did Achnasat Sefer Torah to a Yemenite shul in Bnei Brak. And few months after, that shul got burned and the Sefer Torah of Margalit Ben Bat Avraham Gamliel got burned. After years that she saved, little by little, Sefer Torah got burned. So she said, I'm not giving up. I cannot leave this world without leaving the Sefer Torah that I had. They stole it from me. I'm going to make a Sefer Torah. So she asked the Sofer, would you agree to make me a new Sefer Torah, but I don't have money to give you, but I'm going to sign in the government a release that the checks that they sent to the hospital for me will come automatically to your house and you take the money for the rest of my life. I don't need money. So the Sofer told her, okay, if you do that, I'll make you a new Sefer Torah. So she did it. And he made her another Sefer Torah. And they made Achnasat Sefer Torah. Now she doesn't have money for socks. She cannot buy t-shirts. She cannot buy anything. She doesn't have anything. Imagine a person is in a hospital. He doesn't have $1. So one day, Rabbi Holzberg, there was one rabbi, Ashkenazi tzaddik, he used to come and visit the sick people there, because they have nobody in the world. But you know, he cannot go in, so he has to speak to them from the glass. So he came over there, and he saw this Yemenite woman sitting. By now she got older. And the nurse is screaming at her, "Tipsha, you stupid! Why you gave your money to the rabbis for Sefer Torah? What a woman like you need a Sefer Torah? You stupid! Look at your socks, they all have holes. Look at your dress, it's all dirty. It's already became black from the dirt. You don't even have money to buy yourself a normal dress. Why are you so stupid?" She screamed at her. So she answered her. She told her, "Listen, to have a husband, I won't have. To have children, I won't have. So what would I live in this world? I'm a Jew. Why did I come for this world? I have to leave something here. What would I leave?" And he listened to this Rav Holzberg, and he ran right away to Rav Eliashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Gdol Ador, passed away about a year ago. He said the story to Rav Eliashiv, and Rav Eliashiv say, "This woman deserves that you take a car with a megaphone and you drive all over Bnei Brak and all the religious neighborhood and you scream, 'Margalit Bat Avraham Gamliel Kalat HaTorah.' To do it in the night of Simchat Torah in Israel, they make a big parties on the street." He said the same thing, there is Chatan HaTorah that makes a party. You have to announce that everyone will know that the Kala, the bride of the Torah for the Eretz Israel, is this woman that nobody knows who she is. This is a person that has Yirat Shamayim. You understand? She agreed to stay with no money all her life. Why? Because it was important to her so much to have Sefer Torah. And really, between you and I, why did she really need to donate Sefer Torah? Sefer Torah, it's $30,000, $40,000, or $50,000 to get a good one. She gave all her life for that Sefer Torah. Why? This is the heart of a Jew. The heart of a Jew, you should know, it's not so simple. There used to be a rabbi, his name was Rav Shlomo Karlibach. He used to be by Chabad. Then he got separated from Chabad and he became independent and he started to go to places, play guitar, and people were singing. And many people started to become religious from his music, because he used to tell very touching stories in the middle of his songs. He used to tell stories. Everyone was crying from the stories of Ashgacha he used to tell. So he was doing Kiruv in a very unique way. One time, when he was on a plane, he see a woman. Her name, he says here, Kati. Kati is not a Jewish name. He looks at this, who is this woman? She works in the airline. She's a stewardess. She's serving food in a thing. She stands on the side with a non-Jewish name. She takes out a sidur and she prays Shmona Esrei. As Karlibach is looking at her, it's very strange. A few minutes later, she came. She saw him with yarmulke and a beard. So she started to serve him like she served a king. So he said to her, "Listen, do you mind I ask you a question?" She said, "Yes." He said, I look at your job and your name. I didn't know you're Jewish, and I saw that you're praying Shmona Esrei of the Jews." So she told him, "Yeah, Rabbi, I'm in the process of converting. I want to be a Jew." So I told her, "Very nice." So after a few hours in the flight, before he left, she served him so nice. So she asked him, "Rabbi, can I ask you a favor?" He said, "Of course." He said, "Listen, I have a boyfriend. He's a Jew. And I'm not Jewish. And me and my boyfriend love each other very much and we want to get married. But you know that a Jew cannot marry a non-Jew. So I wanted to convert even before I met him. I always loved Judaism. Now it's urgent. I have to finish my conversion that I can get married. So he said, okay. So she said, but there's only one major problem. The parents of my boyfriend are Holocaust survivors. And they don't want to hear anything from Goyim. They say they had it. In Germany, they don't want to hear. They say to their son, if he marry me, he's not their son anymore. And now he wants to marry me after I convert, but he's not going to go against his parents, especially after what they had. He's the only son. So can you maybe call them, your rabbi, maybe you explain to them that I'm going to be 100% righteous, a gioret, I'm going to keep all the mitzvot. Can you do that for me? So of course, write your name, write your telephone, write their name, their telephone number. I'm going tonight to the hotel, I'll try to call them. When he arrived to the hotel, first thing he did, he called the house of the chatan, of the boy. And his father picked up the phone. And he said to him, Shalom, it's Shlomo Karlibach. I met this stewardess on a flight, and I understand that she's already involved with your son for a long time. And I wanted to ask you, why do you care if she convert? She looks like a very sweet, righteous girl. She has manners. You know, she looks even good. What's the problem that she marry your son? So he said to him, Rabbi, with all due respect, please don't push your nose into this thing. We went through horrible life. What we had, we don't want converts. We don't want anyone that used to be an angel. We don't want. Please don't push. He saw there's nothing to talk about. They're not willing to listen. So he hung up. And he called her house to tell her that he wasn't successful. Who picked up? Her father. So he said, sir, can I speak to Kathy? He said, Kathy is not home. Who is speaking? He said, this is Rabbi Shlomo Karlibach. I need to speak to her. He said, Rabbi, I never heard your name before. My daughter knows you? He said, yeah, we met on a plane. That he tells him the story. So he said to him, wait, Rabbi, did you call the parents of her boyfriend? He said, yes. No, what did they say? They said that it's not going to work out. He said, you see? He said to his wife, I told you. No matter what's going to happen, they're not going to accept us. So, Rabbi, I have news for you. We also don't want them. Don't try anymore. We don't want them. They don't want us. Our daughter is not good enough. We also don't want them. So he said, okay. He was about to hang up the phone. Then the old man say one more sentence. He said, I want you to know one more thing that I never told anyone. My wife and I also Jews. And we are Holocaust survivors. But we didn't want our daughter, when the day she born, to know that. So we lied to her and we told her that we Christians because we didn't want her to suffer what we suffer here in America. Who knows what's going to happen here one day. So she doesn't know it. As soon as Rav Shlomo Karlibach heard that, he said, wait a minute, you Jewish from birth, you and your wife? Yes. Hold on, I'll get back to you. He hung up the phone, he called right back to the house of the boy. His father picked up the phone, true story. Who are you? Rav Shlomo Karlibach. Oh, you again? I told you don't push. He said to him, no, something just happened. And he told him the entire conversation with the last sentence. Right away, the father changed completely his attitude. So, well, if that's the case and they can prove it, of course we agree. We like her. She's a great girl. we always thought she's a Goya. So he said, if I will arrange a meeting, would you come to my room tomorrow night at 9 to the hotel? Say yes. If they agree, we come. We bring the son and we come. He called back the father of Kathy. He explained to him what just happened. Also, he changed his attitude. Okay, tomorrow at 9 o'clock. After that, he was nervous all day, like he's making a shidduch now. The next day, 9 o'clock, the first family showed up to the hotel. So, Kathy came. Her father, her mother, they come, they're waiting in a hotel. A few minutes, the other family would show up. As soon as the boy and his father came into the room, the two old men are staring at each other, frozen, and looks at him, and he looks at him back. And then one of them screams, Fischel! And the other one say, Nachman! You alive? You alive? I was sure that when the Nazis took you, that's it, they killed you. And Shlomo Karlibach is standing over there. The two old men fell into each other's arms and started to cry like two little kids. They cry, they cry. So then after he said, can you explain to me what's going on here? He said, Rabbi, we were chevruta in the yeshiva when we were kids until we became adults. One day in the middle, the Nazis came into the yeshiva. They took him to one place. They took me to one place. And we never saw each other since then until now. Then they look at each other. Nachman said to his friend Fischel, Fischel, do you remember how we swore to each other before the last minute that we say goodbye, that if we will survive in a war and will stay alive, we will do anything we can to marry our children together, that we will become a family. Do you remember? And he say, yes. He say, see, Hashem did it for us. In a world of, at that time was 6 billion people in the world, a boy meets a girl, and in the end, this is based on the swearing of their parents many years ago in Auschwitz. And they got married. And he brought that story to show you the Ashgacha. What's the Ashgacha? How much we owe Hashem if we really pay attention to how much He does for us? There's nothing to compare. We have 5 minutes left. 5 minutes left. I'm going to read to you two things that maybe will change your life from now forever. The words of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish was very, very important Rav, one of the biggest in the last 100 years. And he writes like this. This is what he writes. Im Adam uba'al nefesh. If a person has a nefesh, nefesh is the lower part of the soul. Ush'ato she'at ha'sheket. And his time in life, it's a peaceful period in his life. Chofshi mira'avon ta'avani. Free from these material desires. Free from all the hunger to this beautiful materialistic world. Free from that. Even for one day in his life. Az ro'e et ha'olam be'enayim behirot. That will be the first time that he will see the world that Hashem made, and for the first time, he will be able to analyze the world correctly. Let me explain a little bit further what the Chazon Ish wrote here. This is a very key to succeed in life. If you want to be tzaddik, you must know this sentence very, very good every second of your life. The Chazon Ish say, the only way to see the truth in this world, the divine providence, the divine supervision, the Ashgacha of Hashem, and everything that Hashem made in this world with the purpose and the Torah and the mitzvot and everything, how they fall together into one big puzzle. The only way to understand it in a spiritual way, in a spiritual eyes, is first to get disconnected from the cables of this material world that is choking us and going around us and make us paralyzed. The only way to see the greatness and the spirituality of Hashem, the sweetness of Hashem, ta'amu ruki tov Hashem, is first, remember, even for one day, to get rid of the hunger and the desire that we have for money, for food, for cars, for clothing, for jewelry, for women, for men, for all kinds of things. If a person was able to disconnect completely from this world, which means if you offer him a good steak, not interested. You offer him a woman to make a scene, not interested. You're offering a big, beautiful suite, leave me alone, not interested. If we're able to get to this level, even for one day in our life, that day we will be finally able to see the world in a crystal pure eyes. And then everything from then on will change completely in our life. This is why the tzaddikim in Yerushalayim and in other parts of the world, they reach levels like this all their life, because they reach that key level that the Chazon Ish is speaking about. One more thing that he wrote, very exciting. Im izke adam le'argish et hara ve'animas. If a person will have the merit, the zchut, le'argish et hara ve'animas, to feel the bad, of be'eder yediyat ha'Torah, that a person one day will reach a moment in his life that he will feel so empty, so horrible, so sad. For what? Not that he lost $1,000 in the stock market, no. Or not that his friend didn't say hello to him. Or that the shidduch did not work out. No. Not because of things like this. He will sit, try to understand what I'm saying. A person, you see him, Moshe, why are you so sad? Why are you sitting here alone? Why are you not talking to anyone? And you see, he have tears in his eyes. And you say to him, Moshe, why are you crying? Somebody died? Nobody died. You lost a lot of money? No, I'm only making money. So why are you crying like this? You sick? They told you, Chas v'shalom, you got the machala? No, ani barik moshor, I'm very healthy. So what? What happened? Tell me. He say, for the first time in my life today, I feel how horrible that I don't know Torah, that I'm not a chacham. I don't know Torah. Hashem puts me here. I did everything in my life, but I never learned Torah. So I do not know Torah. The Chazon Ish say, Ad she'imas levavo bebechi, until his heart will melt, you know, melt like ice become water, until his heart will melt from crying. That's what it means to be upset. Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in front of Hashem, Hine Yeda, a person that reached this level should know, Ki kvar zacha be'arbe, that you already reached a very high spiritual level already, even before you started to learn. If you already reach that level, that you're thinking, what a loser I am, what a zero I am, what nothing I am. I have the whole world, I own half of the city, but I don't know Torah, I'm not connected to Hashem in a level that He expects me to. And you begin to cry because of that, not for shtuyot, for this. Chazon Ish writes, listen to what's coming up next, the next few words. The Chazon Ish writes, Hine kvar zacha be'arbe. He already reached a huge achievement. Ve'ashrei chelko, how lucky this person is, hu kvar muvtach lo shetfilato nishmat. Should know that from this moment on, since you reach such level, that Hashem is looking at you, look at my son. He finally realized what bluff his whole life was. And he begins to cry that he did not learn Torah. From this moment on, whatever he asked from Hashem, Tfilato Nishmat Express. Our time finished, but I cannot finish before I tell you a 2-minute story that somebody asked me today to say it here tonight. And I have to keep my promise. And we'll finish with this story. It's something for us to give us something to think about. One Ashkenazi Jew from London, taking the flight to Eretz Israel to stay in Israel between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur in King David Hotel. It's a fancy hotel in Yerushalayim. lots of wealthy people like to go there. They bring a big chazan, Ashkenazi. He sings beautiful mizmorim, Ashkenaz. So many people from different parts of the world like to do it. Aseret Yemei Teshuva over there. So on the plane, he sits next to a secular Jew. What's his name? Maurice Schechter. Not religious. Two English Jews. One Haredi, one Chiloni. What a Haredi does when he sits in front of Chiloni on a plane? He puts tefillin, talit, he prays. He says, do you want to put tefillin? Did you put tefillin today? No, no, leave me alone. I'm finished with him. This Maurice Schechter said to the Haredi, Gansfried, I think his name was. He said to him, I'm done with him. I'm not. He said to him, ah, you're a Jew. What do you mean you're done with him? Cannot. He said, listen. I was in Auschwitz. One day I had one son. One day the Nazis came. They took my innocent religious boy. I was very religious. They took him. They killed him. I had one son. I lost him. He also lost me as a son. Don't bother me. Okay. They arrived to Israel. They're looking for their suitcases. All of a sudden, this Ashkenazi Hasid, he said, oh, I didn't take his number. When we go back to England, maybe I invite him one day. So he looks around for him, Maurice. No Maurice. He left already. So he's eating his heart. Why I didn't write his number? He was sitting next to me for 3 or 4 hours on a plane. Okay, so he went to King David Hotel. Now, on Yom Kippur, after he spent 10 days over there, Yom Kippur, the Ashkenazim as a minag, the people that have parents go out of the shul, and people that lost one of their parents or more, they stay inside the shul and they have a special tefillah, it's called Yizkor. It's like some kind of a Kaddish in a different version. So Gansfried is a young Haredi, his parents are alive. He decided to take a walk 2-3 blocks to refresh. Yom Kippur, it's a long day. He walks 2 blocks in Yerushalayim. He sees on a bench in Yerushalayim next to the hotel, who is sitting over there? Maurice Schechter with secular clothes, eating a sandwich in Yom Kippur in Yerushalayim on the street. Face to face. I said, Maurice, what a miracle that I find you. Oh no, not you again. He said, Maurice, you're not embarrassed to eat sandwich on a holy day in Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim Ira Kodesh? He said, what part you don't understand? I told you I have nothing to do with him. That's it. So he said to him, listen, now they're making a special prayer for the people who died. You told me about your son. Come make a special prayer for your son. He needs Ilui Neshama. Come. So he touched a soft spot in his heart. He started to think, come, Maurice, come, do it for your son. Forget about religion. Come for your son. Throw the sandwich to the garbage and come with me. So he said, I'm not dressed for the shul. Don't worry, nobody cares. You come with me, they'll get the point. So he brings him into the shul. This is a true story that happened in Israel. He came inside the shul, and the chazan, the famous world-known chazan, is doing the tefillah. So he said to him, please make tefillah for the son of this gentleman. So the chazan said, of course, what's the name? What was his first name? Chaim. He said, Chaim ben Moshe. Maurice, in Hebrew it's Moshe. So he said, Chaim ben Moshe. So the chazan said, Chaim ben Moshe what? Since when the Chazan asked for last name? Ploni ben Ploni. So the Chazan looking at him, he say, Chaim ben Moshe what? He say, Chaim ben Moshe Schechter. So the Chazan screamed, Abba! All my life I'm looking for you. You're alive! Imagine hundreds of people there in the middle of Yom Kippur. They see this now. Don't play games. Abba, I'm your son. I look for you all over the world. Not only his son did not die, he became the biggest Ashkenazi cantor, Chazan, that they invite special for Aseret Yemei Teshuva to King David Hotel. I don't have to tell you what happened there in the shul. Everyone started to cry. And then this Mori started to cry and say, wow, I'm so embarrassed from you, Hashem. All my life I hated you, I blamed you, and in the end you made such a chesed for me. Not only you didn't take my son, you saved my son, you made him such a rabbi, tzaddik. This is us. We complain, we don't like what Hashem did, what he does. We don't understand 1% what he does for us. We already judge, we think we know. And in the end, one day we come in front of Hashem, and Hashem said, tell me what I did wrong for you. And you have a list. Hashem, you didn't give me the $10 million deal. You didn't give me this woman I wanted to marry. You didn't give me extra child. You didn't give me this. He has a list. And Hashem begins to show him. If you marry this woman, you will never have kids. Why? She was Akara. So I saved you from her. Okay. This $10 million deal, all the people who got involved in a deal, they got 30 years in a prison. The FBI caught everything, was big scam over there. I saved you from that. This, I saved you from this. This, you should get cancer, but I didn't want you to get it, so I saved you from there. And this is the list of your complaints. Where are we going to hide? Thank you very much for everyone for coming. Hopefully we'll see you in a few months. Kol tov, and have a chag kasher v'sameach in Pesach. Thank you.